I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guests today are Teresa Singleton. Teresa is the Director of Protection from Abuse Services at the YWCA, and also Jill Meyer. Jill is the managing member for Frost Brown Todd. Jill, I want to say congratulations. You are one of the 2012 YWCA Career Women of Achievement this year.
Thank you.
I know you
got to
be feeling like a rock star. They make it such a big deal, too, don't they?
I mean, it is a big deal.
You're on TV, you're in magazines, it's just all over the place. It's fabulous.
It is a fabulous honor, and they certainly do it right, and they make you feel like you're truly being honored.
And Teresa, why does the Y have this event? Why do we celebrate these wonderful women each year?
Career Women of Achievement started in 1980 to really recognize successful women in the workforce and in the community. And it's really important to highlight the successes of women. And these women are really special because not only are they successful, they role model and mentor younger women. And we call it She Lifts as She Climbs. And that's so critical.
And Jill, you clearly are one of the most inspiring women that I know. Certainly, you've made a huge mark in this community. You have so many firsts, you know, before your name, the first woman to do this. And you're currently the first woman to serve as managing member for Frost Brown Todd. Why is this such an important achievement for you?
You know, it's important on a number of levels. My role right now is the partner in charge of our office in Cincinnati. And Frost Brown Todd's been in the Cincinnati market for a long time. And we're now regional, which gives us a bigger presence in our footprint. And so while we've certainly had women who've been on the executive committee and have done some other things, being the partner in charge of our Cincinnati office, which is our biggest office, it's important to me, one, to show that the firm recognizes and treats all of us equally and gives us the opportunities that we're willing to take on. But secondarily, as Teresa referenced, the mentoring and the ability to know that there are women who are coming behind me mm-hmm. who, when they look up, they see a woman in charge of this particular market, that is something that gives them something to reach for. It's attainable, it's out there, and it's something within reach.
What do you say to young women or people who wonder whether or not certain careers are right for a woman? How do you approach that?
It's the age-old question, right? Is it right for a woman? Is it right for a man? Is it right for anyone? I would say this about the private practice of law, certainly. The schooling that's involved is intense and long. And then once you start practicing, it's not a career for the faint at heart.
But it's not, in quotes, just a job for a man either. I mean, there's many women these days who are attorneys, obviously, such as yourself, in high places.
You know, it can be done. One of the good things that we talk about with the legal field is that there's a lot of flexibility, frankly, mm-hmm. in your scheduling. And so when the conversation is about women and the need for some flexibility, the private practice actually serves that up in a nice way.
And Teresa, the women who are selected for this wonderful honor, Jill certainly is a great example, but not just in her work in her office, she's also very involved with the community. That's part of being recognized as well, isn't
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. Virtually every single woman who's been honored since 1980, that's probably 200 plus, they are all actively involved and engaged in doing community volunteer work, mentoring, and truly making a meaningful difference in the lives of people around them.
If folks would like information about the luncheon, it is on
May the 9th at the Cincinnati Convention Center, and they just need to call the YWCA at 241-7090.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is BusinessWise. I'm delighted today to have as my guest Teresa Singleton. Teresa is the Director of Protection from Abuse at the YWCA, and Jill Meyer, who is one of this year's Career Women of Achievement. And Jill is the managing member here in Cincinnati in charge of Frost Brown Todd. Having that YWCA Career Women of Achievement honor and recognition is such a big deal. And I'm very proud of you, and I know all of this wonderful work that you've done, not only in your firm, but also the community. Certainly, it's great for people to recognize that. But I can remember back when I was coming up as a young professional, I would have other women who might be 10 years older than me suggest that maybe I don't get involved in that organization or choose this career path because I'm not a man. But I don't seem to hear that conversation as much. What do you think about that?
Well, I really believe that because of the influence the YWCA has had with Career Women of Achievement. Since 1980, we've recognized women that do extraordinary things in what was once a man's world, ranging from medical, corporate, law.
Jill, you actually were part of the Rising Star program at the YWCA. Maybe you can share what that's all about.
If you want to focus on how the Y really is doing a consistent, good set of deeds, if you will, to keep women, young women, professional women focused on getting ahead, they started, I want to say it was 2002, the Rising Stars program, which is a program where they look around and identify. In fact, the women in the Career Women of Achievement Academy identify younger women who look like they're on the right course, and they're selected as rising stars at the YWCA, which has now turned into a full-blown program for mentoring and training on board service and all of the other good things that go into really building a good professional career. But the Y provides this for young women, and as part of that as well, they become connected to this network of other powerful, interesting, smart women, so that in sticking with the motto, we lift as we climb, it's a whole group of women who've begun climbing together, so that we were, a couple of us joking the other night at the honorees dinner, that I'm one of the first ones who was a rising star, and now I'm being named a career woman of achievement. And we laughed, does that mean I've risen? And we decided, no, we're all still rising, but it is a pretty cool honor.
But you know, I think successful women and really successful men never feel like they've arrived completely.
That's true. And there's so much work to be done that, you know, anything that you're interested in, or there's always something that can be done a little bit better, something a little bit different.
I was so impressed with the amazing amount of good things that the YWCA does here in our community, Teresa. You are the Director of Protection Services, which is so important.
It is. Well, you know, the YWCA touches over 30,000 people in our community annually. And as my role at the YWCA is protection from abuse, which includes shelters for battered women, transitional housing for battered women and their children, educating employers about domestic violence in the workplace, working to ensure that victims of domestic violence who happen to be immigrants have information and services. But beyond that, mm-hmm. the YWCA does so much more. We have an incredible women's art gallery, job readiness, literacy programming, children's programming, youth programming.
It is absolutely wonderful.
I could go on for hours.
But real quick before we go, the luncheon where Jill as well as seven other wonderful women are going to be recognized is on May the 9th. The information, the contact information if folks want to register or learn more?
They can call the YWCA at 241-7090 or check out our website at ywcacincinnati.com or .org, excuse me.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner. I'm with Cooney Faulkner and Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Crystal, today our topic is crowdfunding.
Yes, Tom, and this is part of the bill that was recently signed into law by the president, the Jumpstart Our Business Startups, part of the Jobs Act that was signed earlier in April.
Well, and in the usual vein of our federal government, Jumpstart means they passed the law today, and there's at least 9 months before anyone can act upon it, right?
That's right. That's because the SEC has 270 days from the time that the president did sign the bill into law to investigate it, put forth some regulations, put some rules around it. But the idea is that when this does become available, instead of people having to be accredited investors, now just normal American people within a few guidelines will be able to invest and actually help fund many of our startups.
And so the goal really is to allow startups to more quickly and more easily raise the capital they need so they can grow their businesses. And ultimately, it's called a Jobs Act, and it was passed overwhelmingly by Congress from both sides.
It was.
And the goal is to increase employment.
It is, absolutely. And they say that for every new investment, six jobs could occur. So this is a very big deal. You know, especially in our business, it's so difficult these days for companies to access capital, especially young companies. Unfortunately, banks and lending institutions are just very unwilling to give most startups financing.
As these rules come into play and you're allowed to invest in these companies, buyers should beware, right? I mean, they are highly risky. Anytime you invest in a startup, there's a good chance you won't get your money back.
Yes. And instead of putting all of your money into one startup, many people are saying that these are going to be, for the most part, internet-based opportunities to invest. There'll be websites where people can go online, look at different types of investments, and make choices. So you may want to diversify. So instead of maybe putting $10,000 into one company, maybe you might consider putting $2,000 into five different companies.
Is the thought that there'll be websites for specific industries? For instance, there might be one website that startups involved in social media or in music or entertainment?
Absolutely. And if you think about it, this is just really a wonderful opportunity for people who, for example, live in communities where the startup is to actually invest and help them grow. Consider perhaps a restaurant who has a great following and they want to expand, and the people that go to the restaurant know the caliber of the food. They know the people that own the business. So now if you are a consumer who happens to visit that restaurant frequently, you can actually help that organization grow by investing or loaning it money.
Well, not now, in 9 months, right?
Exactly, in 2013.
Nine months from the date of the legislation was passed.
And the key is to prepare your business, though. If you do think this is something that you want to participate in, like anything, there are ups, positives, and there are negatives. But if you do think this is a source of capital you may want to participate in, go ahead now and start thinking about how you're going to position your company. What are you going to do to make your organization appealing to potential investors? Don't wait until next year to start down the path. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Crystal, today I want to talk about, hopefully you got a refund when you filed your tax return in the last couple of months. And I want to talk about how you should invest that refund as opposed to how you should spend that refund.
And we're not talking about nickels and dimes. For the average American, the refund is almost $3,000. So it really does make a lot of sense to consider how you are going to use that refund to your best advantage.
And the first priority I think a lot of people should have, if you don't have an emergency fund, a fund that you can tap into if you need short-term funds, then you should start it with your tax refund. And most financial planning experts recommend that you have an emergency fund that's equal to 3 to 6 months of living expenses. And we all know, having gone through the recent recession, that most jobs aren't that secure. And so you should have some type of emergency fund.
That's absolutely correct. And after you've established the emergency fund, Tom, the very next best thing you can do is to pay off any high interest debt that you're carrying. Right now, interest rates for the most part are so low, but there are certain types of debt that still remain very high in terms of interest. For example, credit cards. Clearly, that is the next best thing that you can do with your refund.
And another item that you could spend it on is something that you need anyway, but you've been postponing because you didn't have the money. For instance, maybe you have some medical work, a dental work that you could postpone indefinitely, but eventually you need to have. Maybe that's a good use for your refund.
Think about what else you can do with the refund that will actually generate more money for you. For example, consider putting the refund into a traditional IRA or a 529 plan, something that will actually put that money to work for you and grow it into a greater amount.
Or even if you have the opportunity to contribute to a health savings account, increase your contributions to that so you get a tax deduction as well as putting money away for future medical expenses.
And if you've already funded your tax-deferred retirement plans to the maximum amount, your 401k, your IRA, then consider taxable accounts. It's always a good idea to have some money in pre-tax buckets and other money in post-tax buckets.
And if you've got all those bases covered, you should consider, if you're of a charitable mind, making a charitable contribution with some portion of your refund.
Certainly, the charities, as we all know, can certainly use the money, but also you get a tax break for it. The key here is just making sure that you are contributing the money in a way that you're passionate about and you maximize your tax deductions at the same time.
Well, and another long-term goal that some people can use the refund for is the seed capital for starting a business. Maybe you've always had an idea about starting a business, even if it's a part-time or sideline business, but you haven't had the capital to get started. Maybe you should consider using the refund to fund that idea.
And you know, it doesn't have to be an all or nothing, right? You can take some part of your refund and have a little fun with it. Go out to dinner, maybe use it to go purchase something that you've been looking for. But the idea is that you don't want to take all of the money and blow it, because ultimately you won't have anything to show for it next year this time. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Today, our guests are Karen Finan, Karen is the Senior Vice President for Northern Kentucky Tri-County Economic Development Corporation, affectionately known as TRIAD, and also Janet Hara. Janet is the Senior Director for the Center of Economic Analysis and Development at NKU, or more commonly known as the blogger in the Inquirer at Cincinnati.com, the economist that we all follow. You're both here to talk a little bit about Northern Kentucky TRIAD and the economic results, partially as a result of some of the work TRIAD does. What do you have to tell us about 2011 as compared to other years?
Northern Kentucky TRIAD is the lead economic development agency for Boone, Kenton, and Campbell counties. And each year we analyze our results, and through Janet's group's expertise, we're able to identify the impact that it has on the Northern Kentucky area. Last year was a much better year than the several before, and Janet will get into some of those numbers. But we saw an uptick in advanced manufacturing. It actually led Northern Kentucky's growth by 62% of the projects.
What do you mean by advanced manufacturing, Karen?
Advanced manufacturing is one of our target industries. These are industries, these are companies that we go after that have high engineering content, whether it be in the delivery of their goods or their talent. And so we will look at industries like automotive, R&D, machine tooling, when we go out to attract and retain companies to Northern Kentucky, because we have a base here of those types of companies that can succeed.
And generally, those types of companies have jobs that are very, you know, relatively high-paying jobs because they require certain levels of skill.
Those are the very companies, they tend to bring new money into the community. They're not just reshuffling the money that's already here.
Let's talk about the numbers as it relates to the impact of those jobs that were created and the investments that these companies made here in our region.
Well, if you look at the jobs that TRIAD touched this past year, it was about 2,800 jobs. Now, of those, about 1,200 jobs are from new businesses, which are particularly important because they really bring new dollars, new talent into our community, which is as important as bringing the new dollars in.
With those new jobs, what type of impact do they have economically? What's the, I guess, the trickle effect of those jobs on the rest of the economy locally?
Every time you create one job in these primary industries, they typically generate or support additional jobs in the community. And these are also the kind of companies that when they expand or they relocate to our area, they make significant capital investments, which also helps a whole variety of companies. So they have quite a bit of a ripple effect.
The whole idea of incentives, of providing financial incentives to companies to locate in a region as opposed to providing financial incentives to people that's been here for 50 years. Well, how do you make a case that it's okay to use these dollars to bring a new company here that might even compete with an existing organization?
Well, incentives are one tool in the toolbox. I mean, clearly you have to have all the attributes that a company would want to come to a community. If you don't have the incentive programs, a lot of times you get eliminated before you're even in the game. So it's very critical that the community at large have access to those dollars to attract new companies to the market. In terms of retention, Kentucky is looking aggressively at retention opportunities, and there's been a number of programs introduced, including a new small business tax credit for employers who hire one employee, Kentucky-based, spend $5,000 and locate in Kentucky after 1 year. The incentives that are available to new companies are also available to existing companies.
And if all of our competitor communities are going to offer incentives and we don't, we know we will not get these new companies.
If people would like information about TRIAD, what's the contact?
NorthernKentuckyUSA.com or 859-344-0040.
And you can always catch Janet on Cincinnati.com and her blog. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Today, our guests are Karen Finan. Karen is the Senior Vice President for Northern Kentucky Tri-County Economic Development Corporation, also known by the acronym TRIAD. And our other guest is Janet Hara, who is the Senior Director of the Center for Economic Analysis and Development at Northern Kentucky University. And we've been talking about economic incentives. And Janet, I guess one question I have is, when a state or a community offers economic incentives for a company to locate in that particular area, how do you measure the return on the investment in those economic incentives?
Well, you know, mathematically, you would say if you give a dollar in investment, you should get that dollar back plus a little something. When you're talking about incentives, that's exactly what you look at. Oftentimes, we do give incentives to new companies or expanding companies, but more often than not, we get that money back plus more from the new tax dollars that are generated with new property that's taxed, new revenues in the terms of payroll taxes, sales tax collections. So any money we send incentives, we normally get that money back.
When you say normally, I mean, is there really a mechanism that we have here in this region and as the states to track what those investments are, just to hold people accountable?
Absolutely. I mean, there is a process that the state goes through as well as TRIAD in the local communities. There is a wage level. There's a number of new jobs that have to be created within Kentucky, a minimum capital investment. And this is tracked also on a yearly basis to make sure that the companies that are receiving the incentives are actually in compliance with the program. Kentucky is flexible in its incentive offering, meaning that it's easy to get us to the table, but there is a program that surrounds the incentive offering, and we do understand who has the incentives and what they need to do to get there.
When you're dealing with these companies who are considering, you know, multiple locations, perhaps multiple states, even in the tri-state mm-hmm. area, how high on the list for the companies are the economic incentives versus the real estate, the location, the workforce, those types of things?
The companies who look at Northern Kentucky as the right place for them to be are typically driven by their customer strategy. Can they reach their customers? Can they do business strategically in Northern Kentucky or the location they're looking at? What does the workforce look like? Quality of life, educational levels, all of those things have to come into play. The incentives are icing on the cake, but it's not number one or two in most cases.
What is happening here in our community as compared to our neighbors?
Well, Cincinnati in general, and Northern Kentucky in particular, has weathered the recession fairly well compared to lots of other places. All of our numbers for the last 12 to 18 months are starting to show improvement. Unemployment is down, our employment is up, even average income is rising. So our numbers are looking good.
Is there any particular industry or job segment that we seem to be seeing a lot more growth in than others?
Target industry focus for TRIAD for Northern Kentucky is in the advanced manufacturing, the technology sector, which includes IT and life sciences. We also have a focus on aviation and a number of other ones, distribution logistics. Advanced manufacturing led the sector last year in capital investment and job creation, although typically advanced manufacturing jobs, when a project comes attached to it, does not create hundreds and hundreds of jobs. They are typically high-paid, high-tech jobs that are very interesting for the community to land.
We're almost out of time, Karen, but quickly, if you're an existing company or a new company that wants to locate here in Northern Kentucky and considering that move, what's your website?
Our website is northernkentuckyusa.com or 859-344-0040.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Today, our guests are Dr. Ed Hughes. Dr. Hughes is the president and CEO of Gateway Community and Technical College, and Dr. Patricia Goodman, who's the Vice President of Knowledge Management and Strategic Initiatives. And Dr. Hughes, you've been a guest before. Maybe you can update us on what's going on with the urban campus that you have in Covington.
We've been working for a number of years to develop a new campus in the urban section of the Northern Kentucky, which is in Covington Center. We've purchased a school building. We've started some classes there. We've grown from about 100 students to over 1,000 students in about 7 semesters. We're moving very rapidly to develop and finish our plan so that we have a framework to build out this campus, which we believe in the next 30 years will be about 440,000 square feet and serve about 5,000 students.
Dr. Goodman, the whole conversation these days seems to be about education and jobs. It's not enough just to go to school to have a broad education. There really needs to be an ultimate goal of getting a job. So this really is a wonderful example of how business-based education is really going to help grow jobs here in our region.
This whole project that we're working on through the grant that we received from the Department of Labor is really a tremendous partnership between Gateway and Tier 1 Performance Solutions in Covington. And it really started with a brainstorming session about a year ago. And the result of all of that has come down to what Gateway is receiving from Tier 1 in terms of developing a state-of-the-art program and some employment opportunities for Tier 1 through a new associate degree that we'll be able to provide them with many opportunities for
And Tom and Crystal, one of the things that we're doing is we're developing people who can, at the associate level, can help companies develop the kind of training that they do in-house, the really high-level, high-technical training, that there is a real demand for those skilled workers that nobody is doing. And we think this is the first. We can't find any evidence that any other program like this exists in the country.
So, in essence, you're training students so that they can get jobs where they're training their fellow employees.
And they're developing that curriculum to train those employees in companies like Kroger or Macy's, et cetera.
This type of program and this degree may allow many other types of companies to participate in job training in-house.
Right, and as we've talked before, we've had wonderful relationships with employers. Mm-hmm. And so this came out of discussions with employers in terms of what are your needs. And this emerged, and we were very surprised but very glad because we were able to put that into a grant, competitive grant, and win the funding from the federal government to pursue this.
Well, that's wonderful, Dr. Hughes. Let's talk about the impact on the region, and specifically here in Covington.
Not only will we be providing the kinds of experts that can work in the companies in this region, in this larger region, but also some of those students will graduate from us and decide to come to informatics here at the university, and then move on either a university or one of the other companies.
It does seem like both your organization and NKU has such a focus on education as it relates to helping people get jobs. If people would like more information, though, about Gateway Community and Technical College, what's your website?
www.gateway.kctcs.edu.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guests today are Dr. Ed Hughes. He is the president and CEO of Gateway Community and Technical College. And Dr. Goodman is the vice president of knowledge management and strategic initiatives. Dr. Goodman, the old format, or maybe it's not completely old, but the format of just lecturing students is just not working in today's society, is it? Employers are most demanding that when students come out of college, that they have skills that they can put to work immediately. You're working with organizations, specifically Tier 1 Performance, to really help students be job ready the moment they hit the ground running after they graduate.
Absolutely. Employers continually tell us that. They want the experience for the students, not just the lecture. The project that we're working on with Tier 1 is actually a very good, unique opportunity to provide students with 2 years of hands-on experience along with a 2-year associate degree.
And I think one of the neat things about this, Crystal and Tom, is that these students are going to be going through an associate degree in instructional design. That's the same kind of work that they're going to be doing for a company. But when they when they're going through it, they're working with our faculty who are also learning how to be better teachers, more engaging. And so think about it. You're going to pair a student in this course with a faculty member who, in a way, is a student learning how to teach his or her course in a different way. Mm-hmm. It's a wonderful opportunity for the entire institution to retool itself into a much more engaging institution.
And it redefines the role of the learner.
I'm thinking it's not good enough just to go to school so you can walk out and say you have a degree. You need to figure out how that's going to translate into a job.
And not only a job, but many jobs in your lifetime.
Exactly.
So you have to have that ability to be flexible and always continually be learning. And our young people are doing that.
Probably much more so than we were, at least I was at that age, because we thought that we could just get out of college and have a job for the next 40 years. But that's not the way it really worked out for us, and certainly won't for this generation's students.
And as we know, those who are educated will survive and thrive in this world much better than those without.
Dr. Hughes, it does seem interesting to me that as a society, we've focused on this 4-year education, but there's a lot of career paths, a lot of job opportunities for people who just maybe aren't right for the 4-year path.
Well, experts are telling us anywhere between 60 and 80% of the jobs today and in the future will require something less than a 4-year degree. But all of them will require more than a high school degree. So somewhere in there, which is where we are a lot, is where we need to be. And so we have to have partnerships with the universities like NKU and private institutions like Thomas More in our area, as well as with a whole cadre of colleges and universities across this country, because our students don't only take courses from us, they take courses from institutions across the world. at the same time. So we have to partner in a different way. We have to think about how students engage the world, not just this region.
If you would like more information about Gateway Community and Technical College, I'm sure you can Google it.
Or you can go to www.kctcs.edu.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Paul Fox. Paul is the Director of Corporate Communications for Procter & Gamble. So let's talk about communications because, you know, the way we communicate is just changing remarkably as compared to, say, how we all communicated 10 or 15 years ago.
Well, I think, you know, the world is so much more connected these days. Obviously, the social media platforms like Twitter and Facebook and there's numerous others have really enabled that. But in some way, it's back to the future. It wasn't that long ago that we all used to live in extended families. Nobody used to travel very far. You grew up and often the house next door was occupied by your grandparents and then your aunts and uncles and cousins and nephews. They were all in very close proximity and it was this extended family. And if you needed any advice, any help, that's where you turned. These days, we tend to live in nuclear families, you know, mom, dad, and a couple of kids. And we're often hundreds, if not thousands of miles from our relatives. But what's happened, I think, which is really interesting, is these social media tools like Facebook, like Twitter, have really turned us back to becoming extended families. Except those family members now are often people you've never met. They're people you meet online. I mean, there's some remarkable statistics about, you know, how many people have got married these days because they met their person, you know, they went and searched for the person, if not met them, online. So we live in this sort of extended family which has been empowered by this new digital world that we live in.
Well, and how does that affect you as an expert in communications? Because, you know, it used to be you had some time to think and formulate responses to crises or issues. Nowadays, everything travels so fast, you have to react much quicker, don't you?
I think you do have to react much quicker, Tom, but it still doesn't discount the fact that you need to think about how you communicate and what you say, even though the speed at which information now moves is remarkable. I mean, we can watch in real time things that are happening on the other side of the world. And you often hear the comment about, oh, we didn't have this many earthquakes or we didn't have this many natural disasters when I was a kid. Well, the truth is, yeah, we did have that many, if not more, probably. The fact that we never used to hear about them. Because that news of something that happened across the other side of the world will take months often to travel around, if it ever made that journey. Today, we see it in real time.
Is there such a thing as too much communication?
Well, if there was, people wouldn't do it. It would burn itself out. It is sustaining, it's growing, and I think it does serve some incredibly useful purposes. It connects people in a way that they've probably never been connected before. And I think one of the things that we found at P&G, and we're only a little microcosm of the world, but what we found is that homogeneous organizations from one culture or one perspective will always be outperformed by heterogeneous organizations. So if you take that into the digital world, when people are connecting across vast distances, vast cultures, you get this melting pot of ideas and perspectives. I think it's incredibly healthy to do that.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Today, our guest is Paul Fox. Paul is the Director of Corporate Communications for Procter & Gamble. You know, we have a lot of listeners out there who own businesses much smaller, obviously, than Procter & Gamble. In many cases, don't have anyone in corporate communications, any one person. What kind of ideas can you give them to share so they can have more effective corporate communications?
I think the advice that I would give businesses who is really to understand who their audiences are. Who are they trying to do business with? And not probably enough thought is given to that area. There's a lot of assumptions about who are important to our businesses. So I would advise people to stand back and really think about who are the individuals, who are the groups, who are the stakeholders that actually drive my business, because those are the people that you need to talk to. And it won't be just one group. Mm-hmm. It very rarely is one group. Sometimes the most important audience that a business has to the people that work for them. Yeah, and employees, whether they're current employees or retirees or alumni, they're often your best advocates. It's often an audience that is neglected by a lot of companies who don't think about, we need to tell our own people what we're doing. I mean, that's one thing. The other thing is we live in a very, very transparent world today. You're really only a click of a mouse button away from uncovering all the information that you would ever need to find out about a company. Making sure that you communicate what you actually stand for, because people, that's important to people these days. And how does that relate to me, the consumer?
Is that a written philosophy? Do you share your purpose with your employees regularly?
It's something that actually goes to the very core of what P&G is. And I think if you flick back decade after decade, as you went back 175 years to the company's formation, you will find that we've always been driven by doing the right thing. Mm-hmm. You know, this purpose-inspired, we call it purpose-inspired growth strategy, has been at the very core of everything that P&G has done. We've always done the right thing, regardless of what it is. So if you look back, you know, hundreds of years, you know, more than 100 years, you know, we were the first company to start profit sharing with employees. We were the first company to allow employees to take Sunday off. It's always been at the very core of what we do.
So again, advice, one last bit of advice for folks then would be, make sure you know who your target audience is, have your communications always going to that, and then make sure you share what you're doing with your employees both ways, right? Not
both
only
ways.
Telling them, but listening.
Yeah, both ways. And also think about how you reach them. There are many different ways of communicating. So think about all the ways that you can reach those audiences, from the face-to-face conversations like we're having today, through to the ubiquitous news release, through to social media channels. That's where people are getting their information today.
And some of it depends on their age, doesn't it, and their background.
It does.
For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.